Clear.
It is clear it is hit.
Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Rules to order. We have a big sign-up list here today for our first agenda item, which is Senate Bill 1008. And so I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1008. And I will, Cherie, why don't you introduce it?
Sure. Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 1008 directs the Department of Environmental Quality to hire a contract with a third-party organization for the purpose of completing an inventory on non-road diesel engines no later than July 1st of 2019. The bill prescribes third-party qualifications and requirements for the inventory, and additionally authorizes the state to receive monies from the Volkswagen Environmental Mitigation Trust Agreement for deposit into the Clean Diesel Engine Fund, and specifies monies in the fund may be used to award grants for reducing diesel engines. The bill declares an emergency and becomes effective on July 1st, 2017. There are two amendments being offered today. The -3 amendments to Senate Bill 1008A directs the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt rules by January 1st of 2018 prohibiting a person from adding a medium-duty or heavy-duty truck powered by a 2006 or older diesel engine. Additionally, the amendments direct EQC to adopt rules prohibiting the addition of non-road equipment powered by a diesel engine that does not meet or exceed U.S. Environmental Protection Agency non-road diesel exhaust emission standards. These rules would not go into effect until 2 years after they are filed. The amendments exempt farm vehicles, farm tractors, implements of husbandry, and training vehicles from EQC standard rules. And the amendments extend the January 1st, 2017 sunset on school bus retrofits to January 1st of 2025 and provide additional requirements for retrofitting of school buses. The amendments additionally exempt commercial vehicles with a certified 2008 or newer diesel engine meeting specified idling emission standards from the prohibition related to idling primary engine or commercial or of a commercial vehicle, excuse me. Lastly, the -3 amendments permit local governments to adopt ordinances restricting the idling of diesel primary engines in commercial vehicles in prescribed areas. Secondly, there are the -5 amendments, which exclude marine vessels from the definition of non-road diesel engine. We have not received fiscal or revenue paperwork at this time for the -3 or the -5 amendments.
Okay, and today's meeting will be a public hearing only, and we will be focusing most of our attention on the -3 amendments. And we have a lot of people signed up to testify, so our process will be to start with two panels of proponents, and then we will follow with two panels of opponents, and then go back and forth between opponents and opponents. It's possible not everyone's going to get a chance to testify, so please keep in mind that our record is open and will remain open for till, let's say, Friday at 5 o'clock, so anyone is free to submit comments. So please limit your comments to 3 minutes, and I will call our first panel, which is Senator Dembro, Paul Lewis, and Alan Sprott.
Welcome. Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Michael Dembro. I represent Senate District 23, that's Northeast, Southeast Portland. And I'm pleased to talk with you today about Senate Bill 1008, and particularly the -3 amendments. Colleagues, we've known for many years, and with increasing certainty, what a risk to health the particulates and toxins from unfiltered diesel engines are. And you'll hear details about those risks from others with a medical and public health background. In order to address those health risks, the federal government, during the George W. Bush administration, put a requirement in place that all new engines, both on-road and off-road, need to include technology that largely captures and removes toxic materials. All engines built since 2007 meet that standard. That's a great thing. But we still face an enormous problem. One of the positive things about diesel engines is that they're strong and they're long-lived. They're also expensive. And so turnover in many sectors is slow. In some sectors, the turnover has been rapid since the adoption of those federal standards. In those trucks that travel from state to state that put a lot of miles on and have a lot of turnover, and especially those that want to go into California, which has adopted the federal standards for their state to begin earlier. But for those trucks and buses that work only in Oregon, the turnover has been much slower. The same is true of the diesel equipment that's operating off-road. We actually don't have a good sense of the age of our existing non-road diesel fleet in the way that we do for on-road, since on-road is on-road vehicles are registered through DMV. There's nothing comparable for off-road. But it's reasonable to assume that there is and will continue to be a lot of older, high-polluting engines out there. All parts of the state are potentially affected by pollution from older diesel engines, some much more than others. If we do nothing to stimulate a more rapid turnover, an entire generation will be plagued by exposure to these toxins, and among them are most vulnerable Oregonians. Therefore, in 2015, a bill was introduced that provided a mix of incentives and regulation to help move fleets to newer, cleaner engines. It became a work group that started meeting a little over a year ago with a very broad constituency. We heard from many experts. We learned a great deal about the problem. The efforts in California and other states to deal with it, but also the challenges that public and private fleet owners, particularly small fleet owners, would face in complying with an immediate requirement to rid themselves of their older engines. I would say that we reached broad consensus on some things, on how we would allocate any incentive dollars that came our way. And fortunately, over the course of the work group, some dollars did come our way, or potentially came our way, with the settlement of the issues that the states have had, the federal government and the states have had with Volkswagen, which is the Volkswagen settlement is going to send somewhere between $70 and $80 million to Oregon to help us deal with this problem. Colleagues, what I'm presenting to you today is Senate Bill 1008A, I'm sorry, 1008A with the Dash 3 amendments. It covers broad areas of agreement with respect to use of the VW settlement dollars, conducting an inventory of non-road engines so that we have the same understanding of them as we do of on-road, strategies for cleaning up our school bus fleets, and on updating our idling policies. There is no longer in the Dash 3s, as there was in the introduced bill, a requirement for any companies to get rid of their existing engines unless they're the recipients of state or federal grants to do so. There is a prohibition on companies from adding pre-2007 equipment to their fleets. We don't want this problem to get any worse. But with the help of the settlement dollars and other initiatives, we can start to make progress on achieving this turnover. Colleagues, I emailed you, or we posted, and I've given you copies of a section-by-section summary of the Dash 3 amendments. I'll be very happy to answer any detailed questions that you might have, but let me just quickly say that they include those things that I just mentioned, the definitions that would go into the VW program, the priorities of the VW program, that what we're calling the Clean Diesel Engine Fund use. The prohibition on, you know, what's colloquially known as dumping, that is companies adding older engines to their fleets. That's in sections 3 to 5. And let me clarify, as your LPRO analyst mentioned, on the off-road side, that prohibition can't go into effect until 2 years after the rules have been written. And the reason for that is under the Clean Air Act, for the state to act in terms of non-road engines, we have to do exactly what California has done in this area. And California, in their program, it contained a 2-year waiting period after rules were written for the non-road companies to comply. It also provided exceptions for agriculture, as you heard, and other other areas. And I will say that under the prohibition on adding new engines, we do also include the ability for DEQ to provide exemptions and extensions to this based on the amount of emissions that that vehicles are producing, and also where they're located, because as you'll see when you look more closely at the language in the VW settlement priorities, we really are prioritizing our those areas where we have transportation engines, we have construction, we have ports, you know, et cetera. Those who are vulnerable populations are really subject to high levels of pollutants. I want to just finally say, a couple of things. Under the school buses, you may or may not remember that back in 2009, we passed legislation that requires school bus fleets to be clean by 2025 if they are going to replace their engines. If they are going to retrofit, that is, add filters, which is a less expensive way to go, they would have had to have done that by the beginning of this year, 2017. So if we do nothing, that's no longer an option. What we heard in the work group was that there are districts for whom retrofitting really makes more sense than replacing. And in order to stretch those VW dollars, you know, we definitely want to allow school districts to be able to do that. So this legislation, the legislation in this amendment, would allow that to happen. And finally, with idling, I just want to say that this too was the result of a consensus among a work group. All the elements that are in this, in these changes in the dash threes. So I feel very positive about those. Okay, I'll stop there. You can hear from our experts, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have about the process or the details other strategies behind this. Thank you
very much, Senator Dembro. And Senator Dembro did get some slack on the time limit as the chief sponsor and the head of the work group. So I appreciate your detailed summary. And I'll give you a choice to take questions now if you need to leave or to wait till the panel finishes.
The other committee can wait. I'll stay till after that.
All right. Welcome.
I just turned something off. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name's Paul Lewis. I'm here to testify in support of the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1008. I'm a practicing pediatrician. I've been in Oregon since 1996. I'm also the county health officer in Multnomah County. I have just three main points I want to share. I think I'll make the time limit fairly easily. One is the fairly remarkable thing about diesel exhaust in that the particles we're talking about, they're not just tiny. They're really tiny. They're in what are called the nanoparticle scale. If this podium here was the size of one of your human lung cells, a nanoparticle would be an ant at one corner of it. These kind of particles don't act like normal things. Normal junk that gets into your lung, you cough up, you can spit it out. These things are so small, they get inside the cells, they actually get around them, and they circulate to the rest of your body. These tiny particles are made of carbon, and anyone who knows about pollution knows carbon's good at absorbing stuff. Well, these carbon particles have absorbed the metal from the engine, the lubricating oil, and all the products of combustion, all of which are toxic. I did bring my science fair posters for you, which doesn't really do it justice. It has, of course, the requisite human hair and some tiny particles. In this illustration, those are about 100 times too big for this. So again, we're talking not just small, but extraordinarily small, and unfortunately covered with toxic material. The second main point is that these pollutants damage health in a variety of ways. It's fairly obvious that air pollution in general makes you cough. If you have asthma, it makes it worse. It can lead to or make worse chronic lung diseases. Also, those any kind of acute lung problems like that can also lead to heart problems. But I think more profound are the longer-term things because of the carcinogens that include the particulates plus the things coating them. There are long-term problems like cancer. And then as a pediatrician, most important to me, developmental problems in children and even problems in the developing fetus. So that combination of problems I think makes it imperative and not really a matter of debate that diesel pollution is dangerous. It's been declared by itself a carcinogen by the World Health Organization. My final point is that after more than 20 years of practice, I went back to school and got a master's degree, and I actually did additional medical training in a specialty called preventive medicine. And preventive medicine isn't about taking care of sick people. It's about keeping people well. And I think, as Senator Dembro pointed out, this is not a moonshot kind of a problem. The technology to eliminate the vast majority of diesel pollution has been available for quite some time. So I urge your support for the Dash 3 amendments. Thank you for your time.
And very well done keeping in the time. Welcome.
Chair Burdick, committee members, thank you. My name is Alan Sprott. I'm Vice President of Environmental Affairs for Vigor Industrial. We operate shipyards in Oregon, Washington, Alaska, as well as manufacturing facilities. We're in support of this legislation, and I won't go into the health benefits. I think the doctor covered those very well. Those are the primary reasons. That is the primary reason that we're in support of this. We've already taken steps at our facility. We're rolling out a program to replace all of our older diesel equipment already for the health of our employees and the surrounding communities. For us as an environmental issue, this is really a matter of priorities. The citizens of Portland, businesses, and ratepayers have already signed up for an over $1 billion cleanup of the Portland Harbor, yet the public health benefits in terms of scale are minuscule compared to the public health benefits of this diesel problem. My company spends an enormous amount of money on dealing with environmental mandates to come at us, and frankly, many of those have little environmental or public health benefits. So it's very frustrating to us as a company to see resources being spent on things where there's this huge problem that's out there and that has been there and identified for some time. We are very sensitive to the cost of this and want to make sure that this is something that the school districts and small businesses can comply with. We don't want to see a lot of financial stress put on them. I think the timing with the VW settlement is ideal for this movement at this time, as well as there was an article in the Wall Street Journal just last week that there is a glut of used, newer diesel trucks on the market right now. So the timing from the standpoint of replacing equipment with compliant equipment is also ideal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? All right. Thank you very much. Okay, our next panel will be Chris Ellison, Angela Crowley-Koch, and Lincoln Hahn, or Tyler Hahn, from Lincoln High School. Okay, got it.
I really appreciate that.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, ladies, gentlemen of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak in favor of this bill. I am representing Oregon Pupil Transportation Association. We deal mostly in school buses. And just two big points I want to hit on is we need this extension. There is a huge financial impact to school districts and ultimately the state school fund. If we do not have this extension. I'm going to give you an example. Under current legislation, under current statute, a school bus must be scrapped if it is a pre-2006 bus or a pre-2007 bus. Scrap prices right now for a school bus is roughly $400. A retrofitted bus, one that meets or best available installation, would be approximately $12,000 to $15,000 that the district would receive for a model year 2003 bus, for example. So the loss of revenue on that, basically the districts are asking for more funding out of their general fund, which ultimately impacts the state school fund on that. So school bus values are commonly determined by the Yellow School Bus book. That's the companion to the widely available Kelley Blue Book, if you will. So we, Oregon Pupil Transportation, firmly believes that school buses must be looked at and supported for the health and safety of our children. And the Volkswagen Mitigation Fund is an incredible opportunity and an excellent start for replacing or retrofitting these aging buses. And we respectfully request your committee's support of the -3 amendments of Senate Bill 1008 as presented by Senator Dembro.
Thank you. And we had a little confusion as to whether you put your name on the record or not. So why don't you just repeat it?
I'm sorry. I am Chris Ellison. I'm representing Oregon Pupil Transportation Association.
Thank you. Who's next? Why don't you go next?
Hello. My name is Tyler Hahn.
Back off from the mic. Sorry. It's very sensitive.
My name is Tyler Hahn. I'm from Lincoln High School, and I'm here with, as part of the Environmental Justice and Sustainability class. There's a pilot program there. And I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 1008-3. I was 7 years old the last time the Oregon legislature tried to address the problem of diesel pollution, and since then, very little progress has been made. My high school is an area where diesel pollution is worse than in 90% of the country. For the last 4 years, my peers and I have been exposed to very high rates of pollution, yet most students are unaware of it. A PSU study found that the highest rates of diesel emissions are around construction sites due to construction vehicles in those sites. There is a tremendous amount of construction going on in the area around my high school as well, which increases the risk that we face. We will be going to college next year, my peers and who are also here with me. But we hope that the future generations do not have to go to school in an area where the very air is deleterious to their health. If you do not take action and ban dirty engines now, you will be responsible for the negative health consequences inflicted upon young people. We know that diesel engines cause a variety of health problems, including negative effects on brain development and the respiratory system. We also have the ability to stop this problem now. While we appreciate the -3 amendments that would prevent old diesel trucks from California being sold in Oregon, the amendment does not get to the root of the issue that dirty diesel vehicles are still permitted to operate and poison the air. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Welcome, Angela.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Angela Crowley-Cook, Oregon Environmental Council. OEC supports the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 1008. And I want to talk about one particular provision that's in the -3 that we think is very important, and that's the provision to ban used dirty engines from being sold in Oregon. Because Senate Bill 1008 was stripped of all the deadlines to phase out dirty engines, as a state we should at the very least be preventing used engines from coming into Oregon. And we know this is happening. I also submitted for the record an article the Oregonian did about this problem of California, in particular, engines coming into Oregon. And I'll just quote the article quickly. Seven California companies that sold dozens of old trucks to Oregon buyers told the Oregonian they've gotten rid of them to comply with California's emission rules. So that the provision in the Dash 3 would prevent this kind of dumping of these old dirty engines into Oregon, and it's really the type of action that we need to see. Also, the article actually quotes several companies from California, so we do indeed know this is happening. They said it on the record in that article. OEC and our members across the state are disappointed that the most important policy proposals to protect public health were taken out of Senate Bill 1008, the deadlines to phase out dirty engines in Oregon. Without those deadlines, there's no guarantee of pollution reduction outside of the regular fleet turnover, which can take 10, 20, 30 years to remove all those dirty engines. So we urge your support on the Dash 3 amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you. And the article is in the is on OLIS.
Correct? It should be, yes.
Okay. All right, thank you. Our next panel will be Bob Russell, Mike Eliason, and John Rakowitz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. I've had my testimony from the Senate Energy and Environment Committee on this bill posted on OLIS. It's got a lot of good background material, and much more than I can go into today. What I'd like to do is be very brief and confine my remarks to the Dash 3 amendments and indicate where we are in agreement and where we would like to see some modification. The primary bone of contention for us is Section 4, which would prohibit adding vehicles to our fleets that have engines that are older than model year 2007. There's a number of things that I think we can do to improve that particular provision. Right now, it is set up so that DEQ would be doing the regulation. I think it would be more efficient if DMV did the regulation so that at the time that the transfer of title were to happen, and then it would be very easy for DMV to say that this engine is too old and you can't title it in Oregon. We also need some exemptions for certain types of vehicles, fixed load vehicles, antique vehicles, vehicles of special interest, and emergency vehicles. Emergency vehicles is particularly important. A lot of rural fire departments have very old fire engines, and they work just fine. They don't use them much, and they're very expensive to replace. So we would like to see some exemptions from that provision. We also have an issue with the effective date. We'd like to see a longer effective date. California has spent billions of dollars providing incentives to the trucking industry to move to the newer engines. Washington, Texas, Florida, I mean, there's a number of states that do not have any regulatory programs that have provided incentives because they would like us to move into cleaner engines. Oregon has not spent a nickel. And thanks to the Volkswagen settlement, there will be some money. But if the priorities are as we think they should be, my members will not see any of that money. So we would like to have more time in order to make the transition. Just to give you a, sort of a snapshot of where the industry is today, the trucking industry that's operating based in other states in Oregon, which is a long-haul industry, 85% of them have engines that are 2007 or newer so that they meet the requirement. My members that are domiciled in Oregon, only 53% have the newer engines. The total fleet is at 80%. With a little more time, we can make the transition, and it will not provide any hardships. I did want to say that we are in agreement on Section 21, which is the idling provisions, and the way it's written in the dash threes, we're just fine with that, and I'm out of time.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Rakowitz, Associated Oregon Counties. Associated General Contractors, my friend here, grabbed hold of my brain here for a second. Representing the commercial construction industry, what's important is the lion's share of our industry looks just like Oregon's economy. We're mostly small business, and I think people may not understand that. Quickly, before I speak to the Dash 3 amendments, I will be submitting testimony after this, given the shortened time, to get into the more particulars. But I do think it's really important to remind ourselves that on the underlying bill they engrossed that came to you, to this committee, calls for conducting a comprehensive off-road third-party inventory, and here's why. California is the only state permitted under federal clean air law to devise its own off-road regulatory program. What was driving California when they did this was they had and still have large EPA non-attainment areas associated with the PM particulate matter 2.5. In other words, they had a serious and a documented problem that Oregon does not have, documented under the EPA standards. So, unfortunately, California used an EPA modeling method to determine the level of emissions that focused specifically on the construction industry's equipment and the emissions being produced by the industry in California. National AGC, California AGC, just could not believe the numbers. They went out and did their own effort, an extensive analysis, and here's what they came back and were able to demonstrate to the governor of California and the California Air Resources Board when it was all said and done. The original EPA modeling information had overestimated the emissions of off-road construction diesel equipment by a margin of 340%. That's not a small margin. And demonstrated, by the way, the construction industry had already met the overall reductions called for by the state of California in its new regulations. We would really like to avoid that in the state of Oregon. That is our primary point, which is, with that in mind, that's why we believe the first and absolute key first step is a comprehensive inventory. In fact, it was AGC that proposed that, and that is why it's in the underlying bill. So, to the Dash 3 amendments, I want to focus on Sections 5 and 24 that apply specifically to the off-road. Based on attorneys that we had review this amendment very late last week, we believe that Sections 5, and in particular Sections 24, will require EQC to impose the off-road California diesel regulations by rule no later than January this coming year, and in keeping with the federal requirement, there will be a two-year delay. Again, this would mean that regulations would be put in place before and without the benefit of an inventory, which is our key point. I would like to just add, we have a very large coalition that will be testifying today, public and private. We have worked really hard on the underlying bill and worked hard to gain bipartisan support for that. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Michael Eisen with the Association of Oregon Counties. Our members discussed the diesel emissions issue extensively at the beginning of session when Senate Bill 1008 was first introduced, came to certain core conclusions. We'd certainly like every citizen, every county to breathe the cleanest air possible. However, most counties do not have a demonstrably significant diesel emissions problem. Most counties and other local governments do have a significant funding and budget issue. Therefore, based on those principles, we oppose the original version of Senate Bill 1008 as well as the Dash 2 amendment that was floated earlier because they contained a series of broadly applied unfunded mandates, including registration programs, the expedited California program phase-out, public contracting mandates, and other problems. We were, however, able to support what is before you in the A engrossed version of the bill, which is really a very targeted use of VW BMW settlement fund money, which frankly means not spreading the money out as broadly as we normally would advocate for, but targeting it to where the biggest diesel emissions problem in the state is, which is basically in the Portland metro area, which has far and away the highest concentrations of both on-road diesel emissions and off-road construction, just the most activity, densest population, et cetera. We also support a detailed off-road inventory that will provide the data that has heretofore been missing, including whether and how much any off-road equipment has come up from other states. But we need to find that out before we move forward with other proposals. We also strongly support the addition of the idling, allowing local governments, should they choose, the option of restricting idling within certain zones that contain vulnerable populations, schools, hospitals, rest homes, et cetera. However, we do not support in the -3 amendments the provisions around the buying and selling of pre-2000 on-road equipment, nor the adoption of a similar, seemingly similar policy for off-road equipment. Counties and other local governments, again, have both on-road and off-road equipment in their fleets. Many smaller population rural counties have a lot of equipment, frankly, from the 1970s and 1980s. Should that equipment fail, hypothetically next year, if this was in place, and for them to be forced to buy the newest technology is frankly beyond their means, and often they would go and buy, let's say, equipment from the 1990s, and that to mandate them to only purchase the newest technology when their particular county may not have a verifiable issue with diesel emissions is something we would oppose. So in closing, we have the opportunity here to pass a bill that moves the ball forward on diesel emissions with the settlement money, the inventory, idling restrictions, not even including the discussions going on around transportation and congestion reduction, which is another important factor. So happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you. Our next panel.
They were just confused.
Yes.
Our next panel will be Jim Geisinger, John Iverson, and Jenny Dressler.
Well, we're just trying to figure out who they work for. They seem to be confused.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. My name is Jim Geisinger. I work for Associated Oregon Loggers. I also participated in Senator Dimbro's work group for the better part of last year working on this bill. Our association represents small family-owned businesses that are exclusively located in rural communities. They're family-owned businesses, and most of them have been around through multiple generations of ownership. Senate Bill 1008, as it was originally drafted, would have put our industry out of business, and that's not an understatement. It's a fact. We really appreciate the senator's willingness to modify the bill. He has mentioned on numerous occasions his intent to exclude the logging industry from the bill, and we really appreciate that commitment. As far as 1008-3 goes, we still have some problems with it, and they're focused on sections 3 and 4 and 5. We would like to have the same exclusion as the agriculture industry has on this bill. The similarities between our two industries are very stark. A lot of our equipment only operates at partial times during the year. Largely off-road machines that work in very rural areas, remote areas that are not exposed to large populations of people. We don't work next to schools or hospitals. As far as the metro areas go, to the extent that log trucks do pass through metropolitan areas, it's for a very short period of times. There is a lot of traffic between Washington and Oregon that largely is focused on I-205, and again, as I say, for very short periods of time. So we would ask that the committee consider exempting logging equipment and also the concerns that we have with the replacement of older log trucks, pre-2007 trucks. into modern fleets. We run our trucks for a long time. Loggers run them until they don't work anymore. And there are a lot of trucks out there that were pre-2007 trucks. I had a phone call just last week from a lady who was hysterical. She and her husband owned two log trucks. One's a 1998 and one's a 2000. And she was very afraid that their vehicles were going to lose what value they have if this bill was to pass. I tried to explain to her what the current version would do and wouldn't do. I don't think I satisfied her, but I think it's warranted to exclude logging equipment and all the equipment that's associated with performing logging operations from this bill, and I would hope that you would consider doing so.
Thank you. Welcome.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is John Iverson. I'm a third-generation family farmer from the Woodburn area. I want to thank you first for having the F-plate exemption in there. We have run about six trucks on the farm. The newest two we have are both 1995. We just recently upgraded our spray truck to a 1991 International, and that was upgrading from a 1955 Kenworth. We would love to drive newer than 07 vehicles. It's just there's a giant price difference between a 90s vehicle and a 07 vehicle. $5,000 to $50,000 to replace those trucks. Same with our tractor fleet. Our tractor fleet average age is in the 90s. We upgrade when we can, but usually we're buying secondhand vehicles from other people. Where I have a little issues, some of the small transportation companies in our area are running older trucks as well. They aren't F-plated, they're T-plated because they're hauling somebody else's goods, mainly straw and grain, to market. Those trucks are really just used for a couple months of the year during busy times. It gets stuff to harvest, and once it's done, then those trucks are sitting. So it's hard for them to upgrade their fleet as well when you're only putting 2 months a year on a truck. And so those are my concerns with this. If there was a way where we could still buy some of these used trucks, it would really help us out. And you know, we're getting close to 07. Eventually, we'll be phased out in that way anyway. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Senator Roblin.
Just one. We do a lot to compare our programs to California because they're the only state that can have regulations put in place because they got the EPA exemption. In California, they don't make the distinction between logging and agriculture. They're both included. Isn't that correct?
Chair Burdick, Senator Roblin, I believe that is correct. Okay.
Thank you. Our next panel will be Paige Spence, Lana Butterfield, and Tyler Wagner.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lana Butterfield. I'm here representing the Pacific Propane Gas Association. And we support the Dash 3 because it specifies liquefied petroleum gas or propane. Propane is listed as a clean fuel by the federal government. It is used to cook your cook your food and heat your home, but in the vehicle world, it drives fleets of cars, forklifts, pickups, and school buses. And there are over 21 districts now that have propane-powered school buses. Portland started out with just a few, and now it is up to over 400. Propane can be located in the schoolyard because it's portable, so buses can fill up right there. It's clean. Kids don't have to smell diesel exhaust fumes, and it's much cheaper than gasoline, so it saves school districts much money. So for these reasons, we support the Dash 3, and once you get all the bugs worked out, we encourage you to pass a bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Chair Burdick. Members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Tyler Wagner, and I am the Eco Justice and Youth Ministry Fellow at St. Ignatius Catholic Church and at St. Ignatius School in Southeast Portland, representing our pre-K through 8th grade students and over 900 registered families. I am here in support of Senate Bill 1008 and the proposed Dash 3 amendments with additional restrictions on the operation of older, dirtier engines. I get to work with children at our school, which is right alongside Powell Boulevard, Highway 20. 26, and it's not uncommon to see multiple diesel trucks and buses idling at the stoplight as students play on the playground right next to the road. With EPA reporting that diesel pollution is responsible for an estimated 460 premature deaths per year in Oregon, and knowing that the school children at St. Ignatius have respiratory systems that are still developing, we're incredibly concerned about the health impacts on the kids, as well as concerns from our principal and families. Schools around the state are located next to high traffic roads, and many children are exposed to idling school buses waiting to pick them up. Fortunately, sensible air quality improvement measures in other states have shown that we can improve lung function in children by decreasing their exposure to diesel exhaust and other air pollution. When Washington State cleaned up their diesel fleet, including school buses, school children, especially those with asthma, missed fewer days of school and were exposed to fewer toxic chemicals. In addition, in our faith, we're taught to care for and love our neighbor, especially those who are poor and otherwise marginalized. A report from the OEC reports that 23 of 36 counties in Oregon exceed the state benchmark for diesel pollution. In addition, a 2011 study in Portland found that the 10 lowest income and 10 highest minority census block groups experience more exposure to all sources of air toxics than the average block group. This is a health issue and a just issue that needs to be addressed. To remedy this, please support the 10 Clean Engines, Clean Air Act, the Dash 3 amendments, with additional restrictions on the operation of older, dirtier engines. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and committee members. For the record, my name is Paige Spence, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Conservation Network. Oregon and Conservation Network includes groups like Neighbors for Clean Air and the Oregon Environmental Council, who are strong partners on this legislation and who are also here today. OCN has made retiring dirty diesel one of our six priorities for this legislative session, and we are pleased that the bill is before you now, and we do urge you to strengthen the bill as amended. The Dash 3 amendment does move us in the right direction, but it's not enough to achieve our state's health benchmarks. Without a firm timeline for retiring or retrofitting the dirtiest diesel engines currently in use, we may continue to lose lives and pay the high cost of chronic disease attributable to diesel pollution. And I wanted to clarify one thing that I feel like I heard earlier in this testimony from our friends at the Association of Counties. They're talking about the ban as if it affects all current vehicles, and that's not true in the Dash 3. It's just about bringing the additional dirty engines into Oregon. So in terms of needing to exclude emergency equipment in rural areas because they have old equipment, that's fine. The rural fire departments can keep their existing equipment and fire trucks. They just can't purchase additional trucks that have old engines. So Oregon has a diesel problem, and that's why we're here today. And it's both a public health and an environmental problem. On the health side, the best available data suggests that air pollution from diesel engines leads to asthma and also cancer. And in fact, about 90% of Oregonians live in counties, including myself, where diesel exhaust increases the risk of cancer over a lifetime. And on the environmental side, exhaust from engines is also a major source of black carbon, which is a potent contributor to climate change. Black carbon is the sooty black material resulting from the incomplete combustion of organic matter from a fossil fuel like diesel. And black carbon causes significant environmental harm. It comprises a significant portion of particulate matter, or PM, which is an air pollutant and what gets into our lungs and can't get back out. Across the diesel sector, substantial black carbon reductions are possible. And according to the US EPA, black carbon also contributes to climate change, causing variations in patterns of rain and clouds. But the good news is that we can solve our diesel problem in Oregon. New diesel engines, as we've heard, burn about 95% cleaner than older engines, 2007 and older. And it's pretty exciting to have the $73 million from the Volkswagen settlement to jumpstart Oregon's investment in the cleaner engine technology. So thank you for considering this bill and for considering a stronger version. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lana, you mentioned that the Portland School District had converted 400 school buses. I'm curious, were they conversions or was it just replacement with new propane buses?
And I think they
if
were
it was conversion, do you have a sense of what the average cost of conversion was?
I think they were replacements, but I can get that information for you and the cost. I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Roblin.
Thank you. When it comes to the county's idea, I agree that if they have an old truck, they can keep it and run it as long as they want. I think that's pretty clear here. How about if I've got a moderate-sized fire district, let's say Coos Bay, and we've got another smaller one, say Powers, has a small rural fire department, and Coos Bay decides to get rid of its older buses that are before 2007, and Powers has a 2004 14. And they want to, can they buy the one that's already in Oregon and move it to there so they can move the worst one out? Or is, does, as you read this bill, would they have to buy a newer engine when they get the new one?
Chair Burdick, Senator Roblin, I appreciate the question, and I actually do not have an answer for you. I believe my colleagues from DEQ are in the room, and I'm hoping that they would be willing to answer the question.
Because okay, that's how fire trucks, how rural fire trucks get fire trucks, because they buy them from an older fire truck, a newer fire truck deal, and they got to work their way up, because these are, they couldn't afford them otherwise. So that's where I'm trying to make sure that we're not taking away their whole market for a new engine.
Sure. Chair Burdick, Senator Roblin, if we don't get an answer in committee this afternoon, I'll certainly try to get it to you as soon as possible. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next panel will be, we've got a panel of four and only three chairs, so. TJ, it's Lori Satenspiel, Jan McComb, Chris Ellison, and TJ McComb. Got two McCombs?
Chris came up out of order. Chris is not coming in.
Okay, got it. So we only got three. Good.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jan McComb with the Department of Education, and with me is TJ Crockett, the department's transportation director. As has been earlier indicated, there was interest by the VW settlement work group to reduce emissions of school buses, and ODE was brought in to answer the technical questions that came up. We're here to speak to that portion of the bill and amendments that pertain only to school buses. Otherwise, we're neutral on the bill.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is TJ Crockett with the Oregon Department of Education. Current language that is in statute today does not allow for school buses to be retrofitted anymore. So a school district's only option, if they're looking to upgrade their diesel emission technology, is to replace the school bus outright. And what that is doing to our school districts around the state is it's only allowing those buses to then be scrapped as they go. So Section 14 and 15 of the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1008 extend the deadline from 2017 to retrofit to match the replacement deadline of 2025, which will give school districts local kind of options to do what makes sense to locally in order to clean up their local engine and diesel problem. And I did want to address Senator Byer's question about the propane in Portland. Portland, for a long time, has had a propane fleet. That's been a mandate that they had for a while. There was a period of time where they were not able to do propane because they weren't making propane buses. Current propane buses in the school bus field are not actually retrofit. They're purpose-built from the ground up to be propane. So they don't represent the very largest buses that are available. They represent the next size down, which would be conventional. Those have a nose to them. So that's the biggest bus that you can get. And Portland made that commitment a long time ago. There are a number of propane buses in the state. But other than that, we are just happy to be here and answer any technical questions we can on the school bus piece of this bill.
I appreciate it. We've temporarily lost our corner, so I will reconvene us as a subcommittee of the Rules Committee.
Okay.
Go ahead, Lori.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, member and LPRO analyst of the committee, Lori Satenspiel, Oregon School Boards. We also were part of the diesel work group and clean diesel, and I want to thank Senator Dimbro for his work and all the groups. I know more about diesel engines than I ever wanted to know, but I appreciate all that knowledge. I did want to say also one thing about the propane buses out east. They're talking about propane buses don't have enough oomph to get up some of those hills, so that may not be widespread on the east side of the state. Again, I'm just here to support the Dash 3 amendments and the work that was done. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. You were signed up in opposition, so that was unintentional on my part. Question from my lonely
I'm feeling very good. I think schools are trying really hard to be really good people.
They always do, but he's biased.
Okay. He better be.
Thank you. Okay. Marilee Carr, Dana Jones, and Mary Cavetto.
Um,
Chair and Senator Roebling,
you don't have I'm going to be that close.
Okay, I'm going to cede my time. We have written testimony submitted on behalf of Opal. Okay. So.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Chair Burdick, Senator Roebling, Ms. Stone. My name is Marilee Carr, and I have been practicing family medicine in the Portland metro area for 25 years. I'm speaking in support of SB 1008 and the Dash 3 amendments. We become used to the usual diseases that come and go. In 19th century Portland, typhoid fever was a common disease. Dr. Esther Pohl, Portland's health officer, remembered, "We were used to it. The typhoid wards of our hospitals were crowded in the fall of the year, and the death rate was high." But just as Dr. Pohl, okay. But just as Dr. Pohl began medical practice in 1895, Portland changed its water supply. She wrote, "Infected water from the Willamette River was turned off, and pure Bull Run water from the mountains turned on. Typhoid fever, a seasonal blight on the community and a regular source of income to the medical profession, practically disappeared from the city. Here was a lesson in preventive medicine which none of us could forget. A pure, safe city water supply was so rare then that Bull Run water gave the city the lowest death rate in the world for decades. Oregonians and their doctors are used to the diseases caused by diesel pollution, the diesel diseases. I see them in clinic many times a day. Asthma, pneumonia, croup, cancers of the lung and other organs, and the general upper respiratory irritation that newcomers to the state complain of. My patients, their families, and their employers have become used to being sick so often. And it's worse here. Multnomah County, where I take care of people, has the nation's highest rate of respiratory illness, according to the EPA's air toxic assessment. Not coincidentally, we also breathe some of the worst diesel-polluted air in the nation. Respiratory afflictions are chronic, expensive to treat, and less visibly expensive to employers in reduced productivity. Oregon's diesel pollution is so severe that substantially clearing it from the air would, in my estimation, have a benefit to your constituents' health as great as pure, safe Bull Run water. We won't achieve the lowest death rate in the world again because other places are ahead of us. On behalf of my future patients, I ask you to support the Dash 3 amendments to SB 1008 and to go beyond them to strengthen the bill even more, clearing Oregon's air of diesel toxics and benefiting Oregon's health and economy. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. For the record, my name is Mary Pivato. I'm president of Neighbors for Clean Air. And thank you, Chair Burdick, for this opportunity and all the members of the committee to testify in support of SB 1008 with the Dash 3 amendments. And I'd like to, I have submitted testimony. It was testimony that I submitted earlier for the Health and Environment Committee. And I, you know, I'd like to just start with, you know, that our sense is that it's really time. Since 2001 was when Oregon recognized the unique problem and the unique risk of diesel exhaust. And since then, we have taken steps, including in 2007, adopting a health standard to meet a goal of no more than 1 in a million excess cancers. And unfortunately, in that period of time, we really have not progressed at all, and still 26 counties exceed that, and certainly in the Portland metro area, even by far greater. And so it really is time to address this. There's detail about the efforts in our neighboring states that have been far more effective in doing this when compared with other states' efforts in reducing exposure to diesel particulate. Washington and California are so far ahead of us. Washington has upgraded 14,000 diesel engines, most notably in school bus fleet and major transit fleets. And Oregon, in comparison over that same time period, 369 diesel engines. I know we can do better. I'm here to implore you to do better. I'd like to put on record that, for example, in this case of, you know, unusual circumstances like rural fire departments where there is a need to buy older equipment, as long as that equipment is no older than 2007, you know, older equipment can still be purchased. And in other instances, DEQ still retains the discretion that it will need to offer potentially other exceptions. I just think that this is really a common sense issue that we need to move the needle much farther. As I said, over the last decades, all of these same kinds of provisions that we're considering in this current bill just have not moved the needle at all. And I think it's time to really put some accelerating agents into this law and make this happen. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you. Okay, our next... Okay, we're coming back as a full sub, as a full committee, as opposed to a subcommittee, since you guys left. Okay. Mr. Hutnick, is there? Who was the first person to sign up in opposition?
Right there.
Lauren Hutnick.
There you go. Come on up. Melissa Hutnick. And Natalie Nichols. Melissa's handwriting is better than yours.
Good afternoon, panel. Beautiful day, Senator Fiorelli. My name's Lauren Hutnick. I am a truck driver. I own a small low-bed company. I have been in Oregon for 9 months. I fought CARB. And I am a refugee of California. I've seen this whole entire thing play out. Some of these people behind us, I can punch holes in the entire statements on the end of it. You were requesting 2007 because 2007 meets 2010 emissions. Now, this whole thing got started in the late 90s by Mary Nichols, who now sits as the chairwoman to CARB. She also hired a known fraud when she was with the EPA during the Clinton administration to write a study. They found out later down the road that he was fraudulent. The study was fraudulent. Let's fast forward to when she became the chairwoman of the California Air Resource Board. At that point in time, she brought forth another study by an individual named Hiran Tran. That report that one of the people had spoken about got Dr. Enstrom, who was a 35-year professor at UCLA, fired. Because when he looked at the Hiran Tran report and he said, hey, there's something ain't right here. Found out he had a PhD from Cornell University. He was a fraud. They still went forward. Mary Nichols knew that he was a fraud. This whole entire thing was built upon one legacy, and that was the Obama administration's EPA. I've been driving truck for 35 years, got almost 3.5 million miles out of me. I've yet had any one of my friends or mechanics tell me I'm dying because of 2.5 diesel exhaust. This whole entire thing is bad for the economy of Oregon. When this all hit California, I seen towns literally turn into ghost towns. 77,000 trucks were brought offline that didn't need to be brought offline, that just in the registration killed California almost like $300 million to the Department of Motor Vehicles. I can go into a lot of areas with this thing, but you guys got to remember, you're messing with an industry that is the lifeblood of the United States. And yet, as I sit here, 35 years of driving truck, and I got plenty of friends, they died of cigarettes, maybe, but no one has died from 2.5 diesel exhaust. This whole agenda was built upon a lie and a fraudulent science, and it's called junk science and secret science.
Thank you. Who's next?
Hi. I'm Melissa Hutnick. I've been driving truck for 10 years, yet to be sick off of diesel exhaust. You know, the whole industry, you guys are going to sell us out for $80 million from, you know, VW settlement. I'm sure that that $80 million could go to better better things than trying to overregulate an industry that, you know, runs Oregon. Lots of families are supported off of the trucking industry. I know that I supported my family for a lot of years off of the trucking industry, and I still do. And today I'm not sick. Nobody's ever died that I know of from diesel exhaust, and I find it hard to believe that people, some of the studies that I have read says that people of color and of poorness die from this, and they're the only ones that suffer. I find that hard to believe. It's just some of the things that they come up with is very hard to believe. You know, maybe that's what one person thinks, but to try to publish it and make everybody believe that, I think that there needs to be better research and truth to the research. So, thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Natalie Nichols. I own Elkhorn Contracting. I have log trucks and dump trucks. I have been doing this for almost 30-some years and yet to become sick. I am here because this is a decimate action to wipe out a large percentage of the truckers. Everything starts with a log. A log is brought out of the woods by a truck. Everything you use, everything you wear, where did it start? It started with a log, and it started with a trucker. If this bill passes, it is going to skyrocket the cost of living beyond control. Construction, everything. I ask everyone in this room, take a good look around you. What do you see that was not brought in by a truck? I run older trucks, and I run them because you can count on them. The computer systems are not there and going to fail and kill one of my log drivers or somebody else. This is going to be a chain reaction. This bill is a violation of our civil rights as business owners. I am a 100% woman-owned business owner. I feel that this is a discrimination against us to choose our line of work and our equipment that we run. It is a true civil right violation. The Volkswagen money should be looked at into going to our homeless, to our veterans, against domestic violence, our elderly, and mental health. That money could create so many jobs, could correct so many problems. Portland has a problem with congestion with the way their roads are built. There was a News Channel 8 just did a big old thing on it. Take the money from this Volkswagen, correct your roads. You won't have motors idling. The diesel trucks are a small comparison to the amount of cars that idle everywhere. This bill needs to be destroyed, and it needs to just be thrown out. The factories pollute a heck of a lot more than we do in our trucks, and we are your suppliers. And it's going to cost you guys and the people in Oregon a heck of a lot more money than just wiping out a diesel engine.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you.
Can I make one quick statement here?
Very quickly. Silly.
You know, I heard people talking about Oregon becoming a dumping ground for the California truck. Well, as of 2018, you can't have a truck without a filter. So in all reality, that part of this needs to be really looked at, because most of the trucks in California have left
or been sold out of state or have been destroyed or have a filter on them. So you guys really need to seriously think about that, because if a truck's coming in, it's probably coming in from Nevada or Idaho or someplace like that.
All right, thank you. Our next panel will be Spencer Ehrman, Christine Everts, and Kevin Frazier. Welcome.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Spencer Ehrman. I've submitted testimony on your website from City Club of Portland. We studied the issue of air toxics in the Portland airshed, published our report 4 years ago, and we've been working in advocacy of that report since that time. Because you already have my testimony, and I submitted testimony to Senator Dumbro's committee as well, I'd just like to make some extemporaneous remarks. One of the things we came to realize in doing our study was that reducing air toxics pays for itself. Department of Environmental Quality estimates that due to lost time from work, premature deaths, unnecessary hospital, potentially unnecessary hospitalizations, air toxics caused by diesel emissions cost the state of Oregon $3.5 billion a year. I'm a retired insurance broker. I can tell you that if we control our air toxics, we'll see reduction in health insurance premiums, workers' compensation insurance premiums. We'll avoid premature deaths, which costs the insurance industry a lot of money. We'll reduce disability and long-term hospitalizations. The return on investment has been estimated in the state of Oregon of at least 17 to 1. The Environmental Protection Agency suggested that it's a minimum of 20 to 1. John Graham, who ran the Office of Management and Budget for George W. Bush, estimated that the return on investment for emissions controls could be as high as 50 to 1. So I would suggest that solving the problem pays for itself. If we look at the solutions from a from the standpoint of a community, that we're all paying insurance premiums, we're all paying our tax dollars into Medicaid and the Oregon Health Plan, our employers are paying workers' compensation insurance premiums. If we take care of the problem, we're going to see reductions across the board that will pay for the solutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christine Everts, representing ESW Group today, speaking in support of Senate Bill 1008 and the Dash 3 amendments. ESW Group is the leading manufacturer of diesel engine retrofits that has assisted public and private fleets with nearly 20,000 retrofit systems to comply with California regulations or various incentive programs. Based on this 15-year experience with diesel emission control technology and regulation, we believe that the initial version of Senate Bill 1008 would have produced significant air quality benefits for communities in Oregon, and are therefore disappointed to hear that the bill has been stripped of its key components. We do support the Dash 3 amendments, which add back some sensible provisions to the bill. We would urge you to extend the retrofit and replacement deadline for school buses in particular. The extension of this deadline would allow school districts to upgrade their vehicles in a cost-effective way and make sure children are not exposed to the uncontrolled emissions of dangerous ultrafine diesel particulate matter. We're also concerned that the bill may no longer restrict the influx and operation of used non-compliant California vehicles, as has been mentioned. The import and operation of such vehicles will be a setback in Oregon's clean air efforts. And as the experience in California has shown, most of these vehicles can be retrofitted and be made compliant with relatively low installation costs of approximately $8,000 to $13,000 per unit, depending on the system, engine size, and application. Diesel retrofits provide a highly cost-effective option to those who do not have the resources to replace a truck or bus. And while fleet rejuvenation or switching to alternatively fueled vehicles requires significant capital investment, retrofits provide similar PM reductions at a fraction of the cost. We would ask you to please support moving Senate Bill 1008 forward with the Dash 3 amendments, which strengthen the bill and take important steps toward improving air quality for Oregon's school children and citizens as a whole. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Frazier on behalf of Children First for Oregon. For over 25 years, we've represented Oregon's 860,000 kids by providing data on their well-being, and I'm here to testify in support of the Dash 3 amendments. A quick aside, many of you have had the chance to meet with Timber Jim. I'd encourage you to view his testimony on OLIS. He details how some of his colleagues have not been as fortunate to avoid the fatal effects of diesel emissions. Diesel emissions impact both urban and rural kids. 8% of Oregon children have asthma, and many of them spent up to 90 days of their school career between kindergarten and 12th grade on a bus. And as you've heard from many folks, there is a big difference between buses before the 1990s and 2007. In fact, buses from today are up to 60% cleaner than their predecessors. So this is an investment in making sure our kids have clean air to breathe every single day that they're heading to school. I don't know a substantial amount about nanoparticles, to be honest, but I do know a lot about kids' lungs, and they're smaller, and they take in far more air than adults. The cheaper option is to give schools this extension and to allow them to go forward on the retrofits. And as the student from Lincoln High School pointed out, this is an opportunity to make sure school districts have all the power to keep their bus loading zones idle free. The national average for a bus idling is 90 minutes per day. An idle free zone can cut that by about an hour. And so we want to make sure that when kids, teachers are standing outside, they're not breathing in these emissions that we know have long-term ramifications on the well-being of our students. So thank you, and I encourage you to support the Dash 3 amendments and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Okay, our next panel will be Tammy Denny, Rich Engstrom, and Melissa Tucker. Did Rich want to be part of this? Oh, excuse me. I messed up. Our next panel will be Mark Landauer, Mike Fries, and Rich Engstrom. My apologies.
Mark, you want to start or do you want me to?
Good afternoon. My name's Rich Engstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association and also the governmental affairs person for the Oregon Mining Association, a new organization we put together. I'm here to talk about the construction material side as well as the mining equipment and off-road side. I think it's important to understand with this bill there's quite a diversity of diesel interests involved, and especially from the mining sector. Just to kind of give some stats I think are important that that kind of put it in context to how much aggregate folks use for our roads is literally every person in the state of Oregon uses about a dump truck of aggregate material and about a yard of concrete. And we have about 6,000 just direct jobs in the state just in that particular, those two particular areas, both in the mining sector and in the materials side of it. The nature of the mining equipment, to really focus on that, I think, is important for you guys to get a feel for the diversity of the issues that we're trying to resolve in Sections 4 and 5 of the bill. If you look at these really large mining trucks that maybe Wildish has or Old Castle Materials or Hooker Creek, these trucks are generally run in the neighborhood of $800,000 to $1 million. If you look at the excavators, they could be $600,000 to $2.5 million. And I know Delta Sand and Gravel's got a huge Komachi that's probably in that range as an example. The loaders that we use are often the size of homes. They're just massive machinery that we're moving the rocks and aggregate with. Retrofit for these kinds of vehicles is not an option, for sure. You can't, I mean, you really would have to tear the whole front end of the truck apart and re-weld it, because the when you get an engine that size, the retrofit engine is completely differently configured than the engines that are in them. So it comes with a great cost. I think one of the issues that is important for folks to realize is there's a flow of how trucks and vehicles flow through our industry, and especially mining equipment. It's not a question that some of our bigger companies, when they site a new mine site, won't go out and buy the newest and latest and biggest, because they often will. But what happens with the smaller folks as those end up in more rural communities is they cannot pencil out the prices that I just gave you for the amount of aggregate that they're trying to supply for our infrastructure. So they generally buy the second or third level exchanges of these vehicles so they can afford it. It pencils out for them so they can have a viable business that works for them with the quantity of material that they're going to be using in their districts. So kind of with that, I really appreciate the efforts on the dash threes. We like the idling provision. We're okay with the inventory provision. But the last point I want to make is the state of California's approach, which is the problem with sections 4 and 5, is where the rubber meets the road here. And mining equipment is not excluded in that. We kind of thought it might be, but we found out today after Senator Dembrough asked us to do some research, mining would not be excluded from that, and that's a problem. And you heard from the loggers, they have kind of the same problem. We're a seasonal business, and those provisions need to be addressed in the bill. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Thank you. Welcome.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Fries here on behalf of Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Business Association. We represent approximately 1,700 member businesses across the state of Oregon that employ about 250,000 Oregonians. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. We certainly appreciate all the hard work that's gone into the development of this bill. It's something we have been working on ourselves with a broad coalition since last summer, trying to identify real opportunities for diesel engine owners and operators. The bill, the underlying bill, is something that we support, so Senate Bill 1008A. And we are having a hard time coming to terms with the dash threes as they are currently proposed. In particular, and maybe let me start with the things that we do support. The provision that would limit idling in certain areas with signage would be appropriate to protect some of the most vulnerable citizens, and we've heard some of the testimony of that today. We also are really interested in making sure that the Volkswagen settlement funds, these potentially $80 million, are targeted in the areas that are most in need. Those areas are often, consistent with the testimony, are found in Portland. That's something that we don't disagree with. And we think that there's a real opportunity here to do some fleet conversions. The unfortunate part is sections 4 and 5 of the bill are not limited to Portland. They're statewide. And so if you target all the Volkswagen settlement funds to Portland, yet require that businesses and local governments change over fleets to something newer, then without providing them the same incentives that you do Portland, that seems significantly unfair and problematic. When we talk about what we should be doing and how we should be doing it, there are some other provisions to making sure that we have the right data and information, which the underlying bill looks to collect, and making sure that we are making the right policy decisions on facts and not on assumptions. So while we understand that the dash three is what's before you, we would like to continue to work with the committee, find those opportunities of agreement like the idling provisions and targeting Volkswagen settlement funds to the appropriate places, and then moving forward with a bill and something that will move the needle on diesel emissions. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. I'm Mark Landauer here on behalf of the Special Districts Association. Our association represents approximately 950 special districts across the state of Oregon. At the outset, I want to be clear that our members support people being able to breathe clean air, and as you are all aware, most of our districts can be found in rural or frontier areas of the state where there are no diesel emission challenges that I'm aware of. You are also aware that local governments are struggling to deliver services to their citizens, imposing new unfunded mandates on our members just makes that job more difficult. We do support the underlying bill as currently presented before the committee, 1008A, in its current form, and we do oppose the -3 amendment, certain provisions, I should say, of the -3 amendment. Specifically, Section 4 of the -3 amendment prohibits the purchase of pre-2007 diesel trucks. This poses a very significant challenge, particularly, as mentioned previously, to our rural fire districts. Those districts, more often than not, purchase used fire apparatus because they cannot afford new equipment. I did a very informal survey of our fire districts. There were 42 responses. Of those 42 responses, 40 of them currently operate vehicles, fire apparatus, that have pre 2007 diesel-powered engines, and there was a question asked previously whether or not these districts would be prohibited from purchasing pre-2000 diesel apparatus that are currently in the state of Oregon. My read of the bill is on page 8 of the bill, lines 8 through 12, prohibits the addition to a fleet of a 2007 diesel-powered truck. Therefore, a fire district in the state of Oregon could not purchase a diesel fire apparatus from the city of Portland or from the city of Salem. They rely on larger fire districts to provide the smaller districts to use apparatus because it is affordable to them. I would suggest that an amendment be put together that would simply exempt emergency vehicles altogether from this requirement. By the way, I would also support the -5 amendment offered by Senator Roebling that would exempt marine vessels as well. We also object to Section 5 of the bill that would empower the EQC to prohibit the replacement of non-road diesel engines at some arbitrary time in the future. Many of our districts utilize diesel generators for backup power for pumps and also construction equipment.
You can put your the rest of your comments on the record.
Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
Just one, because you, to Rich Angstrom, you talked to California. My concern is that have they noticed any loss of small contractors and other people in yours, the mining industry and whatever? I understand that the larger ones can take the cost of these new vehicles and amortize it so that they can actually make it. But small companies, I worry that what we're doing with the regulations is just saying we don't need any more small contractors, we don't need any more small other people. All we want are the big guys because they can afford to change it. And I worry that we're putting in, and I don't know if that's the experience of California or not, but I don't want us to destroy the backbone of a lot of this industry, which is the small person trying to make a living.
Chair Burdick, Senator Roebling, I just got the information that we kind of assumed mining was out,
okay.
And we've been having that assumption for quite a long time in the conversation. Your question is the second question I need to follow up. Is now okay? Now I know that. What's the experience with the small miners, and how are they handling? You know, I'm just telling you, folks in your district can't go out and afford a $2.5 million excavator. You don't use enough rock to pencil it out.
Thank you. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Hurry.
This is a statement following up on Mr. Landauer's comment. Most of the equipment in Frontier, Oregon, where I serve and represent the citizens, most of the emergency equipment goes directly from the fire hall to the Smithsonian Institute.
<That's right. laughs>
It's so old. It's got so many miles on it, but it doesn't get run much for training. It gets run on life-saving emergencies. And that the compulsion might be for us to write out, write an exemption for them to be held harmless in this dash three, which would create the usual situation I see in Salem, which is an exemption for government that we won't give to ordinary citizens. So, you know, a lot of the small logging, small farming, small commercial operations, family-owned operations, small businesses benefit from that kickdown. They would have to bear the full burden. We're not going to write them out. But I just wanted to point out, Madam Chair, I would hate to see any kind of a situation that exempts government from a whole series of regulations that will crush private sector industry. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Perley. Okay, at this time, I'm going to recess the public hearing on Senate Bill 1008. We have a couple of more people signed up to testify. I kind of cautioned you at the beginning that we may run out of time, but we have two other items on our agenda that we have to deal with. If we can dispense with them quickly, we will reconvene the hearing and hear from Tammy Denny, Jenny Dressler, and Melissa Tucker. So my apologies to you. Okay, we will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2945. Mr. Reed.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2945 requires an incumbent statewide office holder to file for re-election no later than the 77th day before a primary election. In the event an incumbent statewide office holder withdraws during the prescribed withdrawal period, but after the nomination candidacy filing period has ended, House Bill 2945 stipulates that a candidate has 3 business days from the date of the incumbent's withdrawal to file for that office. There are no amendments, and fiscal and paperwork indicates a minimal impact associated with this measure, and revenue paperwork indicates no impact associated with this measure.
Thank you very much. Here to testify on this wonderful bill is Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Ferrioli and members of the committee. My name is Mike McLean. I represent House District 55 in the House. Along with the Majority Leader, Jennifer Williamson, I wanted to thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Ferrioli, for co-chief sponsoring this bill with us. It's unique that the 4 caucus leaders are all on one bill. This bill corrects what I believe is a problem with major party primaries, both Republican and Democrat. It's urban, rural. It doesn't really matter necessarily what anyone espouses. It seems that when the time is up and members leave, periodically members will handpick their successors by manipulating the primary filing date, but the filing process, either by pulling out at the last minute and having their anointed successor file, or, as we saw in 2016, pulling out the day after the deadline so that there was no possible way anybody could file legally, leaving their anointed successor the only one on a primary ballot. It's time to put this to a stop. It's time to have open and fair elections in our primaries. So House Bill 2945 passed with a generous margin in the House. What this does is it requires incumbents to file 1 week before everyone else, and then if an incumbent pulls out, which they would be required to pull out by Friday at 5 p.m. following their filing date deadline, it would then give 3 business days, or in essence a weekend plus 3 business days, for replacements to file. The Dash 2 amendment has come at the request of Secretary of State Dennis Richardson. It creates the filing date for the replacement, in essence, of an incumbent. The incumbents deadline being extended by 3 days, if it they would all come together. So in essence, there is a filing date that would bring it all to a close. Secretary of State Richardson has asked that so that the voters' pamphlet statement is not disrupted in its publication. What this would do, in effect, is create only 2 business days should an incumbent pull out on the 3rd day following the incumbent filing for reelection. What's that mean practically? It means that choices in a district would be limited to, in that instance, a weekend plus 2 business days. So this is not a perfect world. There may be instances where people don't hear that incumbent has not chosen to run for reelection. But at least it's better than the current system we have. And I believe at the minimum 4, but at the other instance 5 days, and at the most a week, the public is better served by letting folks know if a reelection is going to be open. So let me restate. When the power of incumbency is abused in any form, the credibility of the entire election system is hurt. Let's put an end to it and restore faith in our system. I'd ask you to move the -2 amendment, adopt it, per the request of Secretary of State Dennis Richardson, and then move the bill to work session and pass the bill, which I'm very confident will be concurred by your colleagues in the House. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Questions from the panel. Senator Roblin.
I want to thank you for having the -2s from our Secretary of State, because when I was looking at it before and in talking with one of the House members, I was very concerned that you could solve a problem with respect to knowing the event could take place, but you didn't solve the problem with being able to get into the voter's pamphlet. And that's a really big handicap if you're a new person running for an election to not have that available to them. It looks really tight in his amendments, and I think you mentioned that. Are there other things that we could have done to have made it possible to get into the voter's pamphlet with a little bit more time, or is this the best we can do?
Chair Burdick and Senator Roblin, I think this is the best we can do, but I'm always a little leery of saying that, given that this may be my best effort, which means if you looked at it closer, I'm sure you could come up with a better idea. But the voter's pamphlet being the key date, that if somebody is going to be on the ballot, we want them to have the opportunity of being a voter's pamphlet. And what we're trying to correct is those number of cases which have grown in the last 8 years where someone doesn't get notice. And then so that if you want to run, then 5 days roughly on average to be able to say I'm going to run, get in, file, and get a voter's pamphlet statement in is better than not being able to do that. But I think Dennis Richardson, I must confess I have read it, and it seems to me that his request is should be accommodated. Because, in effect, the voter's pamphlet, I mean, other than, you know, Senator Hansel, I'm not sure any of us could win an election that's contested with not being in the voter's pamphlet. So I think that being...
And Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, Senator Hansel was elected without being in the official voter's pamphlet. We simply published our own.
Oh.
So there was a voter's pamphlet. It just wasn't the official voter's pamphlet.
Well, in Madam Chair and Senator Farioli, it is, but to be frank, in a contested primary,
right,
where the other side is spending money, like real money, for Senator Hansel to not be in the voter's pamphlet and still win 2-1 was one of the most remarkable feats I'd ever witnessed in politics.
Thank you.
But that also shows that his service as county commissioner in that district was that if you're not Senator Hansel, not being in the voter's pamphlet puts you at an enormous disadvantage. So I think Dennis Richardson's request is should be granted. But in the end, this, I think, is a good step to make sure no one's abusing the power of incumbency. And then we move forward.
Thank you, and thank you for bringing this bill. I'm proud to be on it, and we will continue working on it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Did you have a question?
Yes, I did.
Well, please hurry.
Let me say, Representative, there's really, I see what you're doing, but there really wouldn't be anything to stop someone who filed from going right up until a couple days before and withdrawing their name.
Senator, Chair Burdick and Senator Beyer, that's absolutely true. And what we've seen is a couple instances where incumbents didn't file and told everyone when they were, and then at the last minute their anointed successor did. We've seen incumbents file and then pull out an hour before. We've seen them pull out a few hours before, and then we've seen them pull out the day after. Both in the House and the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats, although the only ones who pulled out afterwards were Republicans. So I think in the regard of allowing, acknowledging that it's still, you can still give your anointed successor an incredible advantage is true. But my hope is that most people would realize that a contested ballot is not a bad thing. And if you really are confident in your service in your district, then I'm sure your advocacy for your successor will prevail. But lacking confidence, people then game the system. And that's what hurts our credibility.
Thank you. I think the cautionary tale is if you see anybody sign up against an incumbent, you better sign up too.
Madam Chair, you're right about that.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2945 and open up the world's fastest work session on Senate Bill 229.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 229 makes various technical, administrative, clarifying, and conforming changes regarding campaign finance initiative, referendum, recall, and incorporation petitions, candidate nomination filings, and hound canting of specified election contests. There is one amendment being offered in association with this measure today. The Dash 4 amendments eliminate proposed language related to treasurer liability and the requirement that electronic submission of candidate filings. Additionally, the amendment eliminates proposed language prescribing nomination filing requirements and candidate withdrawal timelines, which we just spoke about. The Dash 4 amendments specify that a requisite number of ballots be included in each batch for the purpose of hand counting and increases the current timeline for occurrence of the hand count. Lastly, the amendment includes write-in candidates in the definition of candidate and clarifies recall committees must begin to file financial documentation beginning when the petition is filed. We did hear a public hearing or hold a public hearing on this measure on April 19th. Fiscal and revenue paperwork both indicate no impact associated with the measure and amendments.
Okay, thank you. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 229.
Senator Farioli has moved the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 229. Is there any discussion?
Discussion, Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
This is intended to accommodate the concern of the state elections officials over ability to accommodate the voter's pamphlet, but clearly it's an object lesson in having an overbroad relating to clause because there's other stuff. Thank you, Madam Chair.
This is the Senate Rules Committee Christmas tree bill. Is there any other discussion? Any objections? So ordered. our elections expert, Senator Boquist, will have the opportunity.
We've got to pass the bill first, Madam Chair.
It's been a long
day. He gets to carry the amendment to the floor.
I have to tell you, I'm the lump of coal, so I won't be carrying it.
You're what?
I'm the lump of coal, so I won't be carrying it.
Ah, so he's the no vote, Madam Chair. The lump of coal.
Well, he's carrying
like
no vote.
Like I said, he's
before.
Our expert.
Move the bill.
Madam Chair, I would like to move Senate Bill 229 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 229 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Senator Boquist, do you have something to say?
No, I'm just a lump of coal and a no vote until I read it, and I reserve the right to change my vote on the floor. Okay?
Well, that's a good discussion. Okay, any other discussion? Would you please take the roll?
Senator Beyer?
Sure.
No, thank you.
Senator Roblin?
Yep. Yes.
Vice Chair Farioli?
Yes.
Chair Burdick?
Yes. The bill is passed. And Senator Beyer, would you like to carry this?
Be honest.
No, Madam Chair, he would not like to carry it, but he will.
Let's put it this way. We'll sign you to be the carrier, and then Senator Boquist may get so excited he may want to replace you.
Well, that would be fine, Madam Chair.
The latter half, Lee. Okay.
All right. And now we really are out of time. My apologies to the people who didn't get to testify, and please submit your comments to the record. We're adjourned. No, we're adjourned. And please submit your comments to the record.